Hey, today I'm talking with Ryan Schaff. He's an author, speaker, professor, consultant, and blogger. We're focused on his book, Reinventing Learning for the Always-On Generation, Strategies and Apps That Work. It was written with Ian Jukes and Nikki Mohan, and the book was recognized as an IPPI winner for its contributions as a resource book for educators. You're going to like this one. All kinds of great information about the digital generation.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Ryan Schaff is an author, speaker, professor, consultant, and blogger. Ryan has written and published four books: Making School a Game Worth Playing, Digital Games in the Classroom from Corwin 2014, Using Digital Games as Assessment and Instruction Tools, Solution Tree 2015, Reinventing Learning for the Always-On Generation, Strategies and Apps at Work, Solution Tree 2015, and his latest, Game On, Using Digital Games to Transform Teaching, Learning, and Assessment, Solution Tree 2017. Today we're going to focus on his third book, Reinventing Learning for the Always-On Generation, Strategies and Apps at Work, written with Ian Jukes and Nikki Mohan, which was recognized as an IPPI winner recognition from the Independent Publishing Organization for its contributions as a resource book for educators. Ryan is very passionate about working with teachers, thought leaders, and students. His focus is on demonstrating how educators can use digital tools to create real-world, relevant, and engaging lessons. Prior to teaching at the collegiate level, Ryan was a school teacher who in 2007 was nominated for the Maryland Teacher of the Year Award. Say hi to everyone, Ryan.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me here, Stephen.
Glad to have you, Ryan. I appreciate you joining me today. So before we start talking about your work, tell me where you developed your interest in technology. Was there that one thing that drew you to it?
I had friends that were always interested in technology. One of my friends is a web designer for a big Japanese science corporation. Another friend who was just taught himself how to code. So I always had those friends that would kind of pique my interest. And then eventually, I always wanted to be a teacher ever since, when I was in high school. And as I went through, I was a third grade teacher for many years, an instructional team leader. I just had an affinity for using instructional technology with students. And that's really where it began. I went and got my master's degree at Johns Hopkins in their Technology for Educators program. And the year after, I started teaching in the same program, and I've been actually teaching there ever since without any lapse in time. So really, you can say that it was on the job training, but it was also where I just discovered my passion.
Very cool. So I got to ask this question. Any science fiction involved there? Anything you like?
Science fiction? I truly am a sci-fi type of person.
Star Wars, Star Trek?
Star Trek, Star Wars, Dune. I used to love the not only the Dune movies and the miniseries they made in 2000, but I really love the books. I read all the books, including the ones that Frank Herbert's son started writing. It's just amazing. And now you find out that science fiction really is becoming science fact in a lot of ways. I completely believe that one day we will have thinking machines that'll be making a lot of decisions for us, and I just hope they don't take over.
Very good. Yes, that's that would be bad. I just had to ask that question while you're saying that. I love how some of it has really become. We've got some of that science fact happening now.
Oh, absolutely. That's things that would blow people's minds. Just thinking about the advancements in nanotechnology and how soon things will be created and manufactured. I see nanotechnology potentially ending world hunger and making materials that'll help us to fly to the nearest space to see if we can, to the nearest star so we can actually find, new life, hopefully.
Yeah.
And they won't judge us too hard.
Cool. So talking about technology that we're thinking about here, if you were to choose one digital tool that you have access to today that you wish you had when you were a kid, What would it be?
Kind of a double-edged sword. I would have to say a smartphone.
Nice.
And unfortunately, it's just because, you know, it's both a blessing and a curse. I do feel like cell phones are used way too much by the digital generations. And they're used sometimes just, you know, to really circumvent, I guess is the best word to say, to circumvent, you know, real world. Instead, they have their digital world. There has to really be that type of balance. I would say a smartphone still in the past, because it's really useful to have that second brain, especially if you're writing a paper or doing something, or you have to look up that type of information or discover how to change a tire. It comes in handy.
It really does, and especially what you just said. I have used YouTube video clips to help me with my phone while I'm standing there at the car going, how in the world? And lo and behold, there's somebody who's loaded a video that says, this is how you replace that taillight or whatever. So you know, it's like, nice. I got to say, that phone would be a nice thing, because I know now on another side, it's amazing the power you have in that phone just simply to be able to play music if you're working in the yard.
Absolutely.
You know, in the 70s, I had to place my, in the late 70s, early 80s, I had to place my speakers in the window to be able to hear the sound. Now I got it right there, man. With a nice Bluetooth speaker. Good stuff.
Starting to age us.
Yeah, that's unfortunate too. But hey, I'm vintage now. I just had to look at myself that way. So let's start delving into reinventing learning for the always turned on generation. Who's your target audience and why?
Really teachers today, teachers of tomorrow, even seriously teachers that are, you know, winding down their careers. They're teaching a brand new type of student. In the last 10 years, our demographics have completely shifted in the kids that we teach. You know, we always have those same types of demographics. We always see the socioeconomics, the cultural, race. We see all those constantly changing, but we also have to see that there's other types of demographics. There's the haves and the have-nots when it comes to access to technology, and it's created what I call the digital generation. What my mentors called it. My mentors, the co-authors I wrote this with, Ian Jukes and Nikki Mohan. We call them digital generations because technology is disruptive. It has changed the generations to where the gaps for generations, you know, I'm not a sociologist, but it's really starting to shrink these generations to where my 10-year-old son, Connor, has completely different experiences when it comes to technology than my 4.5-year-old son, Ben. So I'm seeing these complete shrinking of generations, but they're still considered the digital generation because they have never experienced a world without iPads, without smartphones, without big, you know, beautiful televisions, you know, that we would have drooled over in the 70s and 80s. They have all the different types of gaming platforms they could ever have, and they really do have information at the touch of a screen. So that's really target is anybody who really deals with this type of generation and tries to teach, I don't even say teach them, but tries to help facilitate learning with these kids. So definitely teachers, parents, it's really helpful for parents to start to, who are nervous about their children thinking about, they use their screens too much. Well, you're right. They might be using the screens too much for not, you know, really unconstructive purposes, but there are ways of using it beneficially. And a lot of kids do that nowadays. They do amazing work, and it's really passion driven. It's not driven by an adult telling them what they have to do.
That's awesome, because that's, you know, it's kind of where we are right now. It makes me wonder, you know, just what the next leap is going to be, because in just a short period of time, the amount of power that's in that phone that we've got, you know, it's that is kind of attached to them now. I think it's actually physically attached to them in young people now. It's, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, what is that next leap that's going to happen? It does make you wonder because of what you can do with it. I mean, I have the ability to, just in research alone, what I can pull up and verify that it's real research is insane how quickly I can do that. And that's just one of those tools. So you know, when we talk about it in the title of the book, you have always turned on generation. And what I want to do is, why do you think learning needs to be reinvented, to use your title here?
Because with the, you know, just like the, you know, how disruptive innovation really changes, you know, the everything around us, you know, socially, economically, even to this nowadays, spiritually, we have to evolve. We find new means to do new, you know, what I call, I think it's from Mark Prensky actually mentioned, doing new things in new ways, making those type of powerful connections. And technology can do that as an agent of change. We really can use that to evolve the craft of teaching, to involve, to evolve the craft of learning. So it's really powerful, and that and it has to change because we're not teaching the same type of student we were teaching in the 1970s or 80s. They are, I don't want to say victims, but they are there with chronic digital bombardment. They are experiencing this in a never-ending cycle. They're constantly bombarded with information, and they have to really learn how to filter and sort through it. As educators, we have to help prepare them and give them those tools to help sort through the endless amounts of information and data they experience to where they can use that to create something really powerful and demonstrate that they've received the information from multiple sources, not just educators or teachers, but nowadays they're learning from themselves. They're learning from the internet. They're learning from internet sources. So.
Yeah, good stuff. The, it is amazing to me because now you have, you almost have to encourage a child to think, if you want them to think without, you know, that technology, you have to suggest that. Otherwise, that's the first thing they go to. And it's that magic that's out there that they are so involved in. And you're right about the different the ways they interact and stuff. And we're going to get into some of that here in just a minute. In reinventing learning, you identify nine key learning attributes of the digital generations. And what I'm going to do here in just a second is read through those nine. And then what I'd like to do is just kind of focus on three of them today. Before we do that, why do you think that it's important for educators to have an understanding of these nine attributes?
It's that they have to understand how students learn nowadays, and that they learn differently than, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. And to have this type of idea where you can almost make changes to your to the pedagogy, to your pedagogical makeup, you can almost make those right away to where you can really make these type of powerful connections with your students. You'll hear these attributes shortly, and you'll say, well, yeah, you know, that does make sense. That I could probably do this and make these little baby steps to change, and you'd be able to connect better with students.
Excellent. So let me, I'm going to read through these, and then we're going to come back and just focus on three of them. So the first one is, digital learners prefer receiving information from multiple hyperlinked digital sources. The second one, digital learners prefer parallel processing and multitasking. The third one, digital learners prefer processing pictures, sounds, color, and video before they process text. Then digital learners prefer to network and collaborate simultaneously with many others. Digital readers unconsciously read text on a page or screen in an F or FAST pattern. Digital learners prefer just-in-time learning. Digital learners are looking for instant gratification and immediate rewards, as well as simultaneously deferred gratification and delayed rewards. Many of the digital generations are transfluent. Their visual spatial skills are so highly evolved that they have cultivated a complete physical interface between digital and real worlds. And lastly, digital learners prefer learning that is simultaneously relevant, active, instantly useful, and fun. So with those nine attributes, what I'd like to do is go back and anybody who knows me in a meeting, if I create an agenda, oftentimes I start with a, I'll go and say, you know I create this agenda, but I want to start with the last and go backwards. So I want to start with the last attribute, number 9, which is digital learners prefer learning that is simultaneously relevant, active, useful, and fun. Let's talk about fun. Why do you think that this is important?
We have to make a connection. We don't want them to, we don't want our students, the digital generations, to die of boredom. We have to be able to really connect with them on their level. They can go, and, you know, if you think about what they do outside of school, it's completely different than what they do inside of school. We ask them to turn off their digital habits as soon as they enter the doors of our schools. Where that is basically almost cutting apart one of the dimensions of our kids. I'm not condoning, you know, a digital habit that would be addictive. But what I'm saying is we have to understand is we have to use the tools that they find relevant. Right? A lot of these kids don't know how to use paper and pencil anymore because they live, if you even think about the high school kids, we no longer have teenagers, we have screenagers. It's to the point now where they're not finding relevance with what we're learning in schools. And I could be the greatest teacher in the universe, but if I'm not using what they find relevant, what they find engaging, then I'm not reaching my students and I'm failing. The best thing that we could do as educators is to try and learn more about our students and use the tools that they like and that they prefer. We were here first, but if we ignore their world, it's at our own peril because we're going to lose a generation.
Yeah, that's so so right on the money there, because if we refuse to get into that world, first of all, we're missing out, because that's where the fun is joining them in that world and figuring out how you can make your content fit and use those tools that they're using. There's nothing better than when the kid finds out that you recognize the latest, greatest thing in social media or whatever digital tool that they've been using, and they go, wait a second, do you know what I'm talking about?
And with this, these are very approachable types of strategies that students can use easily in the classroom. Just to name some off the top of my head, what I would find to be relevant, active, instantly useful, and fun. Podcasting. My goodness, we're doing something like this right now. Kids would absolutely love it. You can still assess them for writing because they have to write a script. As soon as you start recording, you get lots of ums and buzz and all that dead space. They have to discover that there's a craft and that it's creative, and then they have to actually produce the podcast. They have to clean up some of the errors that we have. With some other things is that you can assess other things like, you know, having discussions. So it's not just about a worksheet culture. It's not just about write this paragraph because I feel like you need to write a paragraph. It's about doing things not only that they might find fun, but also things that it'll prepare them for the real world that they find relevant. They upload YouTube videos. They take Instagram pictures all the time and upload them. They share. They create digital mashups, mixing all sorts of different media together to make something new. We have to embrace those approaches in classroom.
I think that's awesome, because one of the things that you're talking about there, first of all, I got to say, yay, podcast, yes, because that in itself is a it is an amazing tool, and hence doing, working in that realm. The YouTube world as well, the kids, it's amazing because I'm working on a YouTube channel, and it's funny, I was looking to try and figure out how to use it by using how to create the channel by using my phone, not having a $600-$700 DSLR, because I wanted to use that to help show teachers around me, here, you could do this in your classroom, and you don't have to have a lot of expensive equipment. Well, what's awesome is there's a whole bunch of kids out there that'll teach you how to do it with just that phone. I think that's cool.
Yeah, and they don't think about that. They truly are, it's truly a piece of them. My kids don't think about the technology anymore. They just, it's a part of them. They're looking for tools that give them some sort of relative advantage that allows them to do something they couldn't do before. So it really becomes transparent, almost invisible. they just pick it up and use it because they know it'll work. Where we kind of have those types of hiccups, where we constantly struggle and fail and learn from that, they don't have as much failure.
And I think one of the things that we'll get into in a minute, because one of the things that's just amazing is that they like working together with these tools. And so I think that is something in itself. And what I'd like to, you know, to do is kind of let's segue into number six, because number six says digital learners prefer just-in-time learning. What are you talking about there?
All right. Well, if you think about schools and how they're developed on the just-in-case mentality, as in you're going to learn this just in case you grow up, you need to know this, or just in case it's going to be on the test that I have to give you at the end of the year, or just in case, you know, by some chance you'll use it in a job that you'll probably change over and over and over again in your career. Again, that's not a terrible thing, but unfortunately, that's not the way that the digital generations learn anymore. They learn in what's called just-in-time learning. And that is, I'm going to learn how to change this tire because I need to learn, or I'm not going to be able to drive. A perfect example I give is I had a brand new van, and I couldn't figure out where the heck the spare tire was. So I had a flat tire, and it was a really hot night. It was like 90 degrees. It was like after 7 p.m., so it was really hot. And I just needed to figure out. So I just put it into a YouTube search, and I found it was underneath the van. And I actually had to use a tool to lower it down from the center of the van so that I have access to it. That's the type of learning that the digital generations are doing nowadays. They don't experience tons and tons of tutorial videos on how to create something in their favorite piece of software. They pick it up and they pretty much learn as they go. And that's really the type of mentality schools need to understand, is that it's not just about just-in-case learning anymore, it's just-in-time. They're learning just in time to finish the project they have to, just in time to fulfill the passion that they now have, their passion projects. So that's the type of mindset the different generations are really experiencing now, is that just-in-time learning. They're doing a lot outside of schools, but inside of school, it's still that just-in-case type of model.
So how do you think that impacts, you know, as a classroom teacher, I used to teach history. So how do you think that impacts the teacher, that need for that just-in-time learning?
I think it changes how you teach them, that it does help to, you know, in that just-in-case model, it's really a big proponent of direct instruction, since just-in-case is really widespread. It's about just being a content dispenser, somebody who gives them a lot of information. A just-in-time educator, I see, is helping the students to really understand the processes and skills that they need to cultivate, so that they, when they experience this type of problem, they can solve their own types of, you know, they can solve them on their own without me getting in the way. So that's how I see, is educators really have to become facilitators in this type of just-in-time model.
Very cool.
Instead of the content dispensers of the just-in-case model.
Very cool. That's I could easily see that. And, you know, that teacher is facilitator, powerful tool in itself. But it does take some adjusting if you've always been the dispenser of all knowledge.
Absolutely. And educators don't have to feel like they have to change overnight or change everything. It's about baby steps, making small progressions, giving your students the ability to choose their own type of way that they express themselves. For instance, you take something like, oh, you all have to write a paragraph about it. Well, it's like, you know, you get your choice. You can develop a podcast. You can make your own comic book strip on it. They're still writing. They're still expressing themselves. They're still delivering the message. They're still communicating. They might even be collaborating. However, what happens is it's just a different type of product, and it's a different experience for them to get to that type of knowledge.
Very cool. So let's take a look at the third one I wanted to look at, which is attribute number four. And this is actually my favorite. Digital learners prefer to network and collaborate simultaneously with many others. What's most important here?
We have to understand that even people that are complete introverts, they're going to probably have to work at one way or another on a big project, which is going to involve working in a team. And now that we have powerful information communication technologies, most likely they're going to be working with people that aren't in the same room. In fact, they're going to be working with people that aren't in the same town, maybe even not in the same country, probably not even in the same time zone. So what they have to do is they have to develop a way in which they have to develop the skills to both interact and collaborate both digitally and non-digitally. Let me give you the best example I can. The book, Reinventing Learning, was written by three authors in two different time zones. And in some cases, we even were in three different time zones. So I live in Baltimore, Maryland, Eastern Standard Time. Ian spends his time between Vancouver, so that's specific time, and also with his wife Nikki, they sometimes also go to New Zealand. So sometimes we're dealing with two, even three different types of time zones, and we collaborate on Skype to actually write this book. We used Google Docs to write all the content down, and we would argue over everything, and we would discuss over everything, and we would make suggestions and do our edits and revisions all on Skype. I'm glad Skype's free, or I would definitely get a really nasty looking bill. It was a wonderful experience, to the point where now we have done that with all just about all of our books we've collaborated on. These co-authors, I've met them less than five times in my life, but they're my closest friends. And I do this all through the use of Skype and things like Google Hangouts or FaceTime or something like along the lines of that. So it really is the demonstration of how we can network and collaborate together. When it comes to our students, they're starting to use Google Hangouts for study sessions. They're starting to use Skype if they want to make a call or present something. Teachers are also starting to use like Skype in the classroom, where they're having mystery Skype, where they can figure out where that other class is from. And they can use their deductive reasoning to figure out, oh, well, you're obviously from this country. Or they can even have guest speakers come in and discuss things with them. Just envision the thought about having an astronaut talk to your third grade students about Earth space science. That's really powerful. Done through the use of information communication technologies. And again, you're collaborating and working in teams.
I love that, because it's one of those things where when you take a look at it, and kids are very used to this world of collaborating when it comes to, you just take a look at what they do when they play online games or whatever. It's funny, there used to be a game show that had this whole you could call a friend type thing. And it's funny because if you watch, and when I say kids, I also mean, 20s. I'm not talking about young. I'm talking about this whole gambit that are part of this digital generation you're talking about. I mean, they're used to reaching out and finding others who can help them. So if you just take games, for example, like some of the online video world, or even the ones that you buy the cartridge of, they'll get online and they'll start talking to others and say, how do you get past this? I can't figure this thing out. And they start talking about it. They start figuring out, or someone's posted on a video of this, and they know where to look to pull that up, or they'll bring in a couple of friends just to try and figure out how to make the game work for them. And I think that's just amazing. That's why I thought this is my favorite one, because it's incredible the way that they will reach out there. In if you're looking back in when I'm in school, you couldn't do this. You had to make a phone call, and then you had to know who you're calling. And so, that didn't really happen. So your closest friend for doing that type of collaboration is probably the media specialist. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. And it's going beyond the traditional, face-to-face or team, to where now we're having, crowdsourcing, and we're now having smart mobs and this type of collective intelligence that we're having. It's discussed quite a bit in the book. It's truly amazing. One of the best examples would be the ice bucket challenge from a few years ago. It was powerful. It was, a lot of people thought it was silly, but a lot of that has helped to increase the awareness of ALS and to the point now where they're probably going to, I would say, defeat that disease all through the use of social media and charity. So it's really powerful when social media tools and social networking can be used for good, for that type of global citizenship. You know, and it's, of course, there's still, you know, it's still a very dark place when it comes to the internet. And, you know, I would never have my kids go and visit a YouTube comment section just because of just how many voices are out there and just how many, even the, and a lot of those voices aren't even human anymore. It's just, they're just bots kind of coming up with random garbage to try and pollute our souls. However, what I think is that if we demonstrate how powerful these tools can be in the younger generations, they'll grow up to be people a lot more responsible than these type of trolls and bigots that now are, you know, being kicked off of these, you know, digital spaces.
Yeah, some of that's insane. It's like you read some of those comments and you're like, really? I'm not so sure that you know, any of that needed to be said. So
they're just basically yelling into the ether. It's just but you know, they have their voice, and the problem is a lot of people still are trying to discover that that social dynamic of online interaction. However, I like to look at the best part, to where I see students that are collaborating together to make something powerful. I love seeing the kids collaborate to where they're connecting from classroom to classroom, or developing something that's powerful, doing partnerships, or being involved in the community, or doing something truly, you know, charity-based or altruistic. That's really where I see the magic, and where schools can also promote themselves too. You know, if you're connecting your classroom with the outside community because you're, you know, let's say for instance you want to interview your local science center, or your local farmer, or you want to learn more about the plants by talking to a florist or the garden center right down the street, that is a potential possibility. And that's where I see where information communication technology can really benefit the classroom, is making those powerful collections, those powerful connections. It shows that schools aren't just about brick and mortar anymore. It's really about, it expands it to where it's an institution that's both digital and non-digital.
Yeah, that's what's amazing, is that it's really expanded the walls of the schoolhouse, and especially if you're using social media to help you reach out to contact others, and then you make those continued contacts through you know, whatever it is that you're doing, so that you can collaborate, like you were talking about, collaborating with your colleagues on the books, and working with the you know, and the kids do the same sort of thing. You can create classroom projects that do the same sort of activities, where it encourages that sort of behavior that they're already doing. I'm amazed at you know, the amount of connectivity that can happen to try and figure out you know, a math problem, or to try and get help with whatever the project is, as they find out that somebody might be an expert on it. And just like you were using the example of talking with astronauts, I mean, you know, it's kind of cool, because they're recently there was a one of the astronauts who was up in I started to use the word Skylab, talking about dating me, up in the space station Skylab. Anyway, he was a graduate of Georgia Tech, and they had, you know, there are lots of people being able to connect with him up in that space station, which was pretty cool. They, you know, just finding these answers using the technology to connect and collaborate, just an amazing tool where they're just so natural at it. And their gaming world is really getting that place. And there's a book out now that's getting ready to be a movie called Ready Player One that really delves into that world of, you know, are we going to that land of where the only way they connect with each other is through the internet, or through the games and avatars and such. But, you know, it's just cool stuff, the way they connect and do things now. And adults doing the same thing, like you creating your book that way. We can now work on projects and not really meet each other. Some of my favorite podcasts, the hosts don't see each other. One one of my favorite podcasts. The one host is in Florida, one host is in California. And I think they've only recently met each other because of some conference they both went to. You know, that's it's just a cool thing, a neat digital world that's happened here that encourages networking and collaborating. Cool stuff. So is one of those attributes one of your favorites?
Well, I'd have to say the last one. Really, I think you have to have that, the fun. I think you have to have that they find it to be, useful, relevant, real world. I think that you have to make that type of connection, that you have to have that type of engaging methodology to where your students want to be in your classroom. That, I think, is the most important. All the other ones will fall into place. But if you're making those type of powerful connections with your kids on a personal level, I think all the other ones will become useful. And they all have their varying degrees of importance to each type of teacher. The younger you are, of course, the more of a visual learner you are. However, everybody in the, everybody truly is a visual learner. So that kind of ties into, two of the attributes right there. Students are starting to try and multitask a lot more, which you kind of find out as a double, you find out it's a double-edged sword. They think they're doing great work, but in essence, they're actually less productive, especially when it's a very cognitively demanding type of task that they're trying to do simultaneously. So we have to try and teach them that task switching is not the best route to go. If it's something very routine, something that's not very cognitively demanding, then they could probably get away with doing it very well and multitask. However, cognitively demanding, no. The most important thing to do is to focus on one task and don't task switch. And this is evident in books like John Medina, who wrote Brain Rules, absolutely awesome author. He writes very clearly. If you can ever get him as a guest on your podcast, do it. Absolutely brilliant. And also other types of neurologists like Dr. Gary Smalls. He wrote iBrain. That was a really good book that talks about how different the brain is of the digital generation. Every aspect, we just have to understand that our kids are completely different nowadays, and that as educators, as parents, we have to try and reach them using the tools and methods. And the most important thing that I can say is about a balance. You had mentioned that story about Ready Player One, about there was like this type of dystopian type of society where they connect virtually, but their life, what about the real world? Is that they're living in poverty and that they're living in overcrowdedness. And that's not how you want to exist. That's not how that's not balanced. That is one reality over another. You have to understand is that we have two different realities now that we have to find harmony and the balance. That's the real secret sauce to the future, trying to find that balance. And something that's going to take years to discover and years to develop, that type of balance.
No, that's good stuff. Good stuff. Well, the attributes just really, they really get you thinking as a teacher. And one of the things that I want to make sure that I point out is that your book has some cool resources that are associated with it. Could you describe some of these and why they were included?
Sure. So every single chapter is broken into an attribute. And for each chapter, there's a digital library that pretty much gives you more evidence, more resources that demonstrate that, number one, that it is an attribute, but two, some of the strategies that teachers are using to try and embrace these different attributes. There's also, on average, there's about 20 tools, apps, strategies teachers can use in their classroom to embrace these types of learning attributes. So each of the nine has on average 20 different apps and strategies that'll reach and access these students.
And I got to tell you, it's awesome stuff.
we're really big into curating resources for teachers because they don't have all the time in the world to try and do their own research. So what we do is we try to provide them with the means to where if they have an administrator who's like, well, I'm questioning this, you know, why would you use this with your students? Well, it's like, well, I have all these different resources ready to go. Or if you just want, you know, teachers are really about curating different ideas that they can come up with this. So it's really like having two books in one when it comes to the different digital libraries that we create. And it's all link created and it's all free. So we don't ask for anything else besides the purchase of the book to have this wonderful type of learning community where we give you all these different resources for free. So this way you can actually experience this in your classroom and begin the next day trying to incorporate the different attributes of the digital generations into the classroom.
And I got to tell you, you're right on the money with those resources. I mean, teachers listening, you won't have to go anywhere else because what you've got access to will keep you busy for a long time going, oh my gosh, check this out. This is, you know, it's going to set your brain on fire when you see all the resources they've provided, which kudos to you guys.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve.
So as we start wrapping up here, if a listener would like to reach out to you and learn more, Ryan, what would be the best way? And if you'd also talk a little bit, I also understand that it's possible to book presentations on the topic. You know, talk a little bit about that, as well as how the listeners find out more about getting a copy of Reinventing Learning for the Always On Generation.
Sure. So it's produced. So Reinventing Learning is produced through Solution Tree Press. You can purchase it directly just by, you know, typing in Reinventing Learning for the Always On Generation. You'll find links at Solution Tree, or I also have an Amazon Central page where you basically type in Ryan, R-Y-A-N-L, Schaaf, S-C-H-A-A-F, and it'll come up with all the books that I've written. I am pretty active on Twitter. It is at Ryan L. Schaaf. You can also email me if you'd like to discuss something, book something. You know, if you need me to come and present something, I would absolutely love it. I'll give you my university email address. It's R Schaaf, so it's R S C H A A F at N as in no, D as in darn, M as in mom, .edu. You can contact me and I'll be happy to discuss whatever you need, or if you have a question, I'd be happy to follow up.
Awesome. And I will share all those links in my show notes. So those of you listening right now, all I got to do is go back to the show notes and I'll make sure that all of that is there, as well as Ryan's Twitter address and his email. So make sure that you go back to the show notes and I'll have it there for you. So
and just as one little thing, I'm not a big fan of doing producing, but if you'd like to hear more about these different attributes, I have been a guest podcaster at the Teach Thought podcast. They're doing wonderful work where they're creating a podcast. In fact, they have over 125,000 downloads so far. They've only been active for a year, but you can go there, and I've been actually doing the series if you'd like a little bit more follow-up. And of course, I'm sure, you know, I'll nag Stephen to come back in the future day to talk a little bit more.
I will make sure that I have them. And thanks for sharing that, because I am a subscriber to them, and I will make sure that those shows with you are linked in the show notes as well. So we will have that there as well for everybody.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Stephen, for having me today.
You're very welcome.
Well, wonderful interview.
I got last two questions before you go, because I like to ask these. So
okay.
Before you go, if you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers, and these are people who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Create a professional learning network. You may also hear them as personal learning networks, PLNs. This way you can actually, you know, almost have a mentorship where you get advice from people and suggestions. You know, I don't know about you, but, you know, I always struggled my first years in the classroom with knowing what resources were out there or what support to do in a certain situation. Developing that type of strong professional learning network will help you so much. Also, don't feel embarrassed to ask questions. Try and, you know, find the mentors that you can, either in your building or in your network. And of course, go out there, and you have to constantly read. There is a lot of good content out there with a lot of good strategies and suggestions and recommendations. And the only way that you're going to get a hold of them is if you go out there and actively become, you know, actively participate in your own professional development. So those would be probably my three most important suggestions for new aspiring teachers.
Awesome advice. Thank you very much. And in thinking about teachers, I have this last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? And if given a chance to say thank you, who would it be? And what would you say?
Yeah, so I had a wonderful geometry teacher in high school. His name was Mr. Rowe. He was one of those Renaissance men who absolutely brilliant, was a writer, was a musician, extremely talented pianist, produced his own album, was very athletic. There was a blowhard who challenged him to do a mile run, and he lapped him in his mile run. So he absolutely was just the Renaissance man. He was but the most important thing is I wasn't the strongest mathematician, but he made that personal connection. He made a mistake in the classroom once, and he apologized to me on a one-to-one basis. He was always kind. He was a little odd, but I found that more endearing. Found out that he probably I think he passed away almost 10 years ago now. Absolutely healthy, and broke my heart. I did get a chance to thank him when I became a teacher, and the professional development was in his building. I did get a chance to come and thank him personally, so I did feel like type of, say, closure, but I did get to say thank you. So this is to Mr. Rowe, who was at Athelstan High School in Columbia, Maryland. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your personal story. It's so good that you were able to thank him before he passed. Great stuff. And before I wrap up everything, this is you have a more recent book, and it's called Game On: Using Digital Games to Transform Teaching, Learning, and Assessment, published in 2017 by Solution Tree. Would you like to do a commercial for it?
Sure. If you're interested in incorporating digital games into the classroom, or just interested in anything when it comes to play-based learning or game-based learning, or even trying to learn what's this term called gamification, definitely purchase the book. It gives you suggested games to play, suggested content areas in which it would benefit. It gives you strategies on how to kind of vet different games. Talks about how to incorporate them into your instructional program. It also gives you, again, just like reinventing learning, it gives you a wealth of digital library that'll help you with just anything that anything from the research that is currently being conducted with gaming in the classroom, to also just ways that teachers are now using it in their own classroom. So you get the kind of both perspectives on theory and practice. So yes, that's also through Solution Tree. You can visit Solution Tree .com to see it, or you can also go to my Amazon author's page. Again, Ryan L. Schaaf, Schaaf.
Awesome. Thanks, Ryan. And thank you so much for joining me today. I thoroughly enjoyed learning about reinventing learning for the always-on generation, strategies and apps that work. Wishing you the best in all that you do.
Thank you, Stephen.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends. Take care.